Thursday, March 4th, was a rather lean day. Not enough happening. Yearning for exercise, I walked around the grounds 3 times in the middle of the afternoon, and I met Lyndon about 3:30, going up to the second floor for his lunch with Mac George Bundy. He either doesn't eat at all lunch, or else it's too late in the day for a balanced routine, or so I think. As I walked, I saw the bulbs, tulips and daffodils, were up about 3 inches, and the buds were swelling on the trees. Spring will be coming very soon. Back upstairs, I joined Lyndon's luncheon group, which by now included Jim Haggerty of ABC and Leonard Goldenson, another ABC man, and Marvin Watson. Among other things, their mission in coming was to talk to me about the possibility of doing a TV show about beautification plans in Washington. It would be filmed over 4 or 5 months, probably to be aired at Thanksgiving, a documentary sort of like their I, Leonardo. I am timid at the thought of that much exposure. I am no authority, just an interested, enthusiastic citizen. I recognize I do have a sort of a tool in my hands by this title I carry, and I want to use it. But I quail at the thought of putting myself forward as a sort of city planner, landscape architect, pedagogue. I think in my shoes there should be someone of exquisite self-assurance who can put other people to work and who in the most ladylike fashion is a real salesman. We talked about the show, whether it would be possible to have a sponsor, and decided that it would not, that it would have to be made available to all 3 networks. And in the end, Leonard Goldenson said he would turn the idea over to a director, go to work on a possible script, and then talk with me about it later. A sad part of the day was to have Linda Bird come over to find me when I was in Jack Valenti's office and burst into tears. I followed her out. Her trouble is the very simple one that she'd finally set her heart on going to Europe this summer. I had been offering it as a plum, planning on it, wishing she wanted to go, promising it to her when she graduated from high school, and now, just now, promising it to her for her 21st birthday, and practically simultaneously, the gold crisis, gold flow out of this country, comes upon us, and Lyndon asks everybody to see America first, to limit that travel abroad this summer. So how can the president's daughter choose this summer for 4 weeks in Europe? As though that weren't enough, I had the abysmal poor judgment to speak of my plans for her when she and Lyndon and I were all together. Poor dear Lyndon. Linda and I comforted each other as best we could after she'd returned from class, tearfully but understanding. And that old, old promise, another time, dear, it'll all work out all right. Tonight was the 8th of the congressional receptions, some 50 or so House members, including the John Davises of Georgia, the William Jennings Bryan Darns, the name delights me, of South Carolina, the Gathings of Arkansas, whom I've known for 25 years or more, Sam Gibbons of Florida, who accompanied me on my last trip, and the Herlongs of Florida, who were responsible for about the gayest family vacation the Johnsons ever had, to Daytona Beach, all 4 of us along with the Thornberries, many years ago. Otto Passman, who makes life miserable for the State Department, the Bob Sykes of Florida, and the Jamie Whittens of Mississippi. We got off to a slow start, but did the picture line rather quickly. I thought I noticed that Lyndon was quiet and not feeling very well. And then, down in the theater, we saw once more the movie on the pictures of the White House. And then, while a noticeably large group departed for the second floor, we heard reminiscences from Eloise Beckworth of Texas, who's told a story about how the baby chewed up the invitation, one I've often quoted, Mrs. Chet Hollifield of California, and Mrs. Hastings Keith, a Massachusetts Republican. We were in the state dining room by 9 o'clock, and it's obvious to me I've got to limit the drinks past or shorten the time spent. This, the 8th, was not one of the best receptions. Secretary Rusk, whose briefings, in spite of the dismal news he often has to convey, are sheer poetry, was absent, and not even the redoubtable McNamara, who's been testifying on the Hill for a marathon of days. Not even he was very good that night, and Lyndon was quiet and brief, striking the fire that has characterized his other performances. The congressman seemed appreciative, but the evening was rather lusterless. It was 10 o'clock by the time we were upstairs. No dinner except for the snacks. And the same is true of all of our guests. If they're going to be this long, I shall have to provide something more. The press is having quite a vendetta with Lyndon on the subject of his alleged suppression of news, with Joe Alsop wielding a very sharp rapier, and Evans and Novak leading the pack. The question is, how to combat it, or whether to combat it. How effective can our work be? How much can they tear us down for the immediate present? And what effect might it have on the way we appear in history?